Can I welcome you to the second in our Visiting Fellows lecture series? It's a theme that is very dear to our hearts, rising to the top. And we have so many students that we see that as our raison d'etre. So our vision for you is that you are going to be future hospitality leaders with world-class aspirations. That is our wish for you. And so in order to achieve that, we feel the theme of rising to the top is most suitable. Just very, very quickly, we would like to welcome you all today. Specifically, we have, as part of our rich exchange history, we have visitors from Russia. We have visitors from Germany. We have our visiting fellows with us here today, some of them, and particularly we'd like to congratulate Vic Laws on his MBE, soon to be awarded. And well done, Vic. And that's for all his support in terms of the hospitality industry. We also have Ian Sarson, who was recently awarded an honorary doctorate with us in November, and again, that was for his services to hospitality business, so again, we congratulate him. We would also like to welcome all our old friends from our visiting fellows who have supported us so well and some of whom are going to be doing presentations today. We have our alumni, presentations from our alumni, from our industry partners, and also from the Savoy Educational Trust, who have recently given us a grant to be able to put in Micros upstairs in the presentation suite. So it's a very full and packed day, guys. So I won't talk anymore. But just to say a little bit about the housekeeping arrangement so people don't think it's too strange. But in effect, because we're in three different rooms and we've got many different presentations and the students are obviously still in lectures, people will be moving in and out. So it's sort of the nature of the day. It's fluid. The toilets are further down the corridor. You just need to turn right and follow your nose down past the lifts. And we are not expecting a fire alarm. So if there is, we will have to evacuate, but we're all so good at it now, you can just follow us and there won't be a problem. Anyway, thank you very much, and with no further ado, I will pass over to Will and Mike, who will tell their story of rising to the top.
Well, first of all, I'm very pleased it's called Rising to the Top and not Risen, because it would put a very different spin on it. And it's also very interesting, being in the profession myself in HR, it's very interesting to see that the HR lecturer sits at the back in the naughty seats. I think that's very true to our profession indeed. So thanks everyone for coming to hear us talk about ourselves, which is in itself should be quite an easy subject. But we've tried to kind of give some examples in our workplace as well at Malmaison and Hotel de Van. Will's going to tell us a bit about how he's been recognised within our business as being a real talent and someone who really is going to go all the way to the top. I'm being particularly nice to him all the time because I know he's going to be a CEO and I'm going to be kind of going around on my walking stick trying to get a job out of him at some point. So, all right, Will.
Should have got that in writing, shouldn't I?
Only later on. Is there anything you want to say before we start?
No, I'm just glad to be back. Obviously, I'll tell you a little bit about where I come from. And my time at Sheffield Hallam, but it's nice to see so many people here today and looking forward to the presentation.
Okay, so the areas that we're going to talk about, well, we're going to tell you a little bit about us, so we're going to tell you about our background and how we got to where we got, and we'll give you some little nuggets to take away, some advice, and then we'll talk about how is the best way to progress when you're within an organisation, because the first step is actually getting the job and getting in there. Then the hard bit starts because you're having to stand out in front of to senior managers in front of thousands of people. So we'll give you some examples about how Will managed to stand out very clearly to us. And then we'll give you an example about what you might find within an organisation that looks at managing talent. So we'll take you through our Rising Star Talent Management Programme, which is what Will is on, and he'll give you some examples about what it's meant for him and how it's helped him to get to where he is today. So we'll talk about how we agree what talent looks like in our organisation, how we identify people, how we benchmark them, and then how we train them up, basically. We'll tell you a little bit about it doesn't stop at education, doesn't stop at formal education. In fact, it becomes more informal focused as you progress throughout the hierarchy of your career, and we'll talk about that. And then we'll just conclude, as with any good presentation format, you start, middle and end. OK, so a little bit about Will and I. So, well, me, I was a bit thick at school. I got two O-levels. They were doing O-levels back then, but it was in the final year. And then I did two resits to get my maths in English. So I certainly wasn't an academically gifted person. But then I left. I left, and I was determined to progress. I had some great career advice from my career officer, and they said, "Yes, you look like you like cooking. You should pursue a career in kitchens." So I became. I thought I was going to become a chef. I did my OND, which was in Llandrillo Technical College in Wales, and my OND I found what I loved doing, basically. And I really excelled there. I came out from having that kind of checkered start with academia. I came out as being the top scoring student for my year. Then I went on to do a higher national diploma in Leeds, just around the corner. Had a great time there. Branched out into, I really wanted to get into HR, and I did my CPP, which is your certificate in personnel practice. I funded it myself, and I did it in the evenings. Because I thought it was the only way that was going to give me the edge over other applicants. And then what I did was I then did my postgraduate diploma, so I did the formal kind of academia again, and that gave me chartered membership of the CIPD. And I think it was I managed to get an organisation to sponsor me to do that then, and I think it was that helped me in my career as a professional in HR. And since then, I've just done some ad hoc education subjects. Like I'm now qualified level one, level two in psychometric testing. So as I'm looking at you all, I'm analysing you for every little twitch that you make. Not really, but it's a really interesting subject, and it was that's really helped me in when I interview people and so on. And basically, my education I see as something that I learn from others, and as I continue throughout my career, my education is something now that I seek out for myself. And it's not always the formal route. It's more through informally accessing other people's knowledge through networking and chatting with them. Over to you.
So if I go back about 10 years, probably education-wise, year 9 at school, I started to think I wanted to be a chef, very much like Mike. So you see chefs on TV, and that's what you sort of want to get into. Anyway, went through the rest of school, did my GCSEs, got 10 GCSEs, but I knew I wanted to go into hospitality, more predominantly the cooking. So I talked to my careers advisor, and they said, well, obviously you can't do that at school now, you're going to have to go to college. Through talking through her a little bit more, I found out that I wanted to have my own business as well. My dad had his own business. And I wanted those sort of qualifications. So she said, why don't you do a BTEC diploma? You can do your MVQs on the side in food service, food preparation. I was still thinking I wanted to be a chef here. Went to college, and I was pretty good at the cooking. I stood out quite well. I was good at the BTEC as well. And to be fair, quite a few of the students there were only there because they didn't have grades to do anything else. There wasn't too much passion there, but there was a few of us that stood out. Anyway, at the end of the first year, I have to go and do a work placement. It's only 6 weeks, but go and work in the industry. And I sort of set my sights high. I want to go and work for Anthony's Restaurant in Leeds, which is a fantastic restaurant, pushing close to Michelin star restaurant. Not there yet, but pushing hard. And for 6 weeks, I just got slogged, yeah, all over the place, like getting a train from Halifax in the morning to Leeds, not getting back till midnight. And now those hours don't seem too bad to me, but back then when I was 17... it was like, oh God, this is hard work, really, really hard work. And then in a hot kitchen, like where perfection is the only thing that'll get you through, and making some silly mistakes sometimes, and you know, there's no inch for error really. So I came out of that and thinking, well, I'm okay at the cooking, and if I put myself through it, I could do okay, but I'll never get to the top. And anything I do think I want to get to the top. I've seen my dad through his business; he's really worked hard to get where he wants to be. And I've sort of taken that on with from him. So I thought, well, I'm good at the front of house. You know, I can talk to customers. I think I've got quite good empathy with the customers, and I really enjoy that. So I thought, I'm going to look at going to university. So I did my final year at college, came to look around a few universities, Sheffield Hallam for me. So I came here in 2006. The first 2 years, I would say I sort of muddled along in the middle. Didn't really stand out too much. Got by, got okay grades, but nothing magnificent to sort of stand me out. And then it was the third year, the work placement, and I always wanted to travel. So I thought, well, I'm going to use this as an excuse to get out of the country, go and see a bit of the world and work hard. Some people were, I'm going to stay in England because I've got relationships here, or I just want to stay in Sheffield because I know Sheffield. But for me, it was all about taking that challenge, that risk, going out and seeing a bit of the world. So as we get, I think, actually, I've just overrun a little bit there, haven't we? It's the next stage, sorry, Mike. Yeah, sorry, so I'll continue. So it was about taking a risk for me. I went out to New Zealand, worked in Queenstown for 6 months in a fairly decent hotel, learnt quite a bit. And the opportunity for me came after 6 months. I could change hotels. I could have stayed where I was. There'd be no problem with that. I was plodding along. I had good friends, a nice girlfriend, so it was nice to live in Queenstown. Like, I remember a lot of mornings I'd wake up, walk down to the lake, beautiful sunshine, beautiful scenery, and say, life can't get much better than this. I was enjoying it so much. However, it was an opportunity to move to the top end of the island and work in Bay of Islands, a different hotel completely, much busier F&B department. So I decided to go for it. And you know what? It paid off so much because I stood out in that bar. I although not a supervisor, I sort of stood out from sort of running the shifts. Gave me a hell of a lot of confidence to bring back, and it's held me in good stead. And I come back to the final year, and I sort of thought, right, it's now time to buckle down and get good grades. I had good people around me that really pushed me along, but I sort of thought, this is the final year, there's no time to mess around, really. Get a good grade, you know, put everything into it. I'll admit, I got my best grades from the presentations because I knew I wasn't very good at writing, and if you look at some of my exams, you probably can't read half the work. So if you look at those results, they're not very good. So it was like everything went into the presentations, all about the confidence getting across there. And I ended up coming out with a first, so I was very happy with that. And moving on back to taking risks, in the final year, I went in for a award called Young Guns. Now, at first, I was a bit sceptical because you have to do a YouTube clip of yourself for a minute and sort of really, really try and sell yourself. And to say my friends took the mick out of me back home in Halifax is an understatement, you know. They were getting this clip up, putting it on Facebook, you know, commenting on what I'd said. But I managed to get my point across and I got invited down to the final.
You were throwing fish, though, weren't you?
That was Andy's one. That was. But I got down to the final. I was lucky enough to have won that. And from then, I then took another risk of moving to Liverpool to work in the hotel. I was never set in staying in one place. I moved where the opportunities are, which is going to help progress me a lot more. And I'll always keep that sort of mindset. You know, I won't be in Liverpool for the rest of my life. I don't know where I'll be, but the right job comes up at the right time. What's right for me, I'll always move along to that.
And I think going back to the theme of taking risks, I think it's really important that you do what you enjoy, basically, because if you enjoy doing something, invariably you are going to be good at it. I had almost every job. I have had almost every job you can imagine. I've worked in a kiosk giving out change when I was studying. I used to earn 80p an hour, and I'd give out change. It was boring job. I've worked in an abattoir, which is my dad had a butchering business, so I used to do all the slaughtering of animals and all of that, which is how I got into HR, I have to say. I think that's there's definitely good grooming, good pedigree there. But I've also been a dibbler, which is where you put the hole in soil to put the seeds in for plants. So I've done almost every job. I've worked on the trains. I was one of those catering attendants during my work placement. But I always knew, and I always really enjoyed HR. I graduated wanting to do HR, and I couldn't afford to pay for myself at that point to do my CIPD qualification. But I went and I joined the John Lewis Partnership as their graduate. I worked for 5 years in John Lewis, actually, and very much I learnt a lot there. I was a catering graduate, and they only took two on every year, so I was quite chuffed to get onto that. But as 5 years came, I was an assistant manager, and I didn't love it, really. I knew I didn't love it. And so I took a risk, and I paid for myself to do my CPP, which is the Certificate in Personnel Practice. And halfway through that, I started looking around for a HR job. And I was lucky enough, fate kind of played a part. I went for two interviews with Forte, and they told me the wrong job that I was applying for. So the first job I went and I talked all about training, and that was the admin job for HR admin. And luckily, I'd cottoned on from the feedback that they said for the second interview. So I'd actually had practice, because training is what I'm really good at and what I really love. Had I done the admin job, I'd have probably not been that great at that one. So I took a risk. I took a pay drop to get into HR from John Lewis. And actually, then I caught up by moving around. I did like 2 year stints and moved organisations, so that every time I moved an organisation, I would say that I was on about £5,000 more than I was on, so my salary would go up. There's a good tip. And also, it gave me a breadth of organisations. So I then moved into more senior training roles, and the next big risk really was joining my previous company called Firmdale Hotels. I started there, And I was a bit nervous, because everyone I met said the last guy was only there for 6 months and he had an offer he couldn't refuse. And everybody had the same line, and I was getting really paranoid, thinking, what's happened to this guy? Something terrible has happened to him. And the owner had a bit of a reputation then. But I thought, you know what? This is a good opportunity. It's a nice regional role. I'm going to take the risk. And actually, that risk really paid off for me, because I was there for 10 years. And I was able to grow the HR function in that business from just me to having a team of 10. And then that got me into Malmaison and Hotel Divan. So I really believe, and I really advise, if you're not enjoying a role, make sure that you stick at it, so that you're not enjoying it because you just can't be bothered to do it. Make sure you stick at it, but do what you love, and make sure, you know, if you really think you don't love it, get out and figure something else out, because you invest a lot of your time in employment, and it's really important to love it. Okay. And I think that links into attitude, really. So for me, the element of my attitude that helps, I think that's helped me progress within organisations, is I am a bit competitive. So I'm quietly competitive, though. I'm not there kind of shouting about everything. I just quietly want to do better than maybe my predecessor or my contemporaries or counterparts in support functions. So I'm quite competitive, and I'm always up to something. And I think that's the key bit, is always having a vision, always having the next thing that you want to achieve, because it helps you take people along with you. And it certainly has been the case for my team. And I think if you have a solution focus, so a lot of people, if you say, you know, what about this? Let's try and do this. Here's an idea. And they'll come up with all the reasons why you can't do it. And I think people who are managing teams like people who can figure it out, and who can, rather than give all the reasons why you can't, starts talking about how you can make it work.
So important that you've just got a can-do attitude. Always be careful of what you say, but it should be always, yeah, I can do this, yeah, I can't do that, I can do this. And with that attitude, it rubs off on other people, and you'd be then the go-to person in the workplace. If you can always willing to take something on, you're that go-to person. And as we're going to mention later, that's just a great opportunity to help yourself shine.
And the next key bit is networking. So to get ahead, one of the things that you can do right from the outset of your career that can make you stand out is network. The people that have really stood out for me have been the very few students that I've come across that have got themselves into various networks that I'm in. So they might go to events, and they'll come up and introduce themselves, or they'll get themselves connected to somebody who they're connected to. And LinkedIn is absolutely fantastic for as a tool to help you figure out who you know to get to the person that you want to. So networking for me is really important. The reason I didn't apply for Malmaison and Hotel de Van as a role. I got that job through networking, basically. So I networked with the predecessor. I networked with a few people within the organisation so that when it was time for the current person in the job to move on, I was at the fore of when Robert Cook says, who should I get for HR? The only person that Sean Wheeler could think to say was me, because I'd put myself out there and networked my way into that job. I had a 20-minute interview with Robert in Dunkin' Donuts in Paddington Station, and I think the advice that a friend of mine said, they said, this guy wants to give you the job. He's heard good things about you. As long as you don't break wind loudly during the interview, I think it's in the bag.
Yeah, and again, for me, getting the job at Malmaison, that was a networking thing, although it was through Young Guns, but if I hadn't won that, I still think I'd have had a very good chance of getting through to Malmaison. I managed to meet 10 leaders of the industry, and all of which were, if you need any help in the future, let me know. I've got their email addresses, I've got their numbers. So if I need any help, I've got someone to go to. And at the time, Mike was actually from Ferndale, and he was one of the judges there. He was the only judge that actually gave me a really hard time, actually, on that day, because I'd applied for the graduate scheme and really put me through my paces. But through that, I knew Mike, and then it happened that Mike came to Malmaison. So I already had an extra link in Malmaison, and like Michael pointed out, because he already knew about me, he was always quite interested in how far I was getting along, what was my next move, that sort of thing. So you can never, you know, never dismiss the importance of just going to introduce yourself. It might only be one time, a little handshake, but you might see that person a second time, and then suddenly you're creating this relationship.
Okay, so so that's about us. Now, when you're in an organisation, how to get noticed and how to stand out. I think the first thing that if you think within an organisation, the senior management, they want to be able to find the talent within their business, that it's within their interest to find people that they can progress, who they think are good, and to look after them. And you guys can make it easier for senior management by doing these kind of little tips that Will does, i.e. introducing yourself to them when they're there, or making sure you've got a little strap line of a success to talk about when you engage them in conversation. And it's little things like that, which are only, you know, it's only 1% more than anyone else do, okay? Because all you've got to do is make yourself stand out from what Will had to do, from the other 2,500 people in the organisation. And I'm always surprised how few people actually do make that extra little bit, that extra bit of effort to make themselves get noticed. And it pays dividends, because we're all human. We've all got limited memories. We've all got kind of, you know, busy agendas, just like you guys do. So anything you can do to help us spot you as being talented, we're really grateful for. And I think sometimes, I know from when I was younger, I used to kind of be terrified of the big boss. I used to think, oh, you know, they're like some sort of alien being that has got superpowers and will see right through me. And it's not the case. So what I've learned as I've moved up through the hierarchy is actually we're all just people. And it's a good thing to remember. So to get noticed, and Will will tell you about these, about how he's done it, but to introduce yourself to people, to volunteer for things, and I'll tell you a little bit more in a sec about the buzz about you and what that means.
Yeah, so like we said, introducing yourself whenever you can to whoever you can, really. You'd never know how important somebody is. But to give you an example, a lot of the head office management team do visit the hotels quite a lot, so it is making a point of, if you see Scott Harper, who's the second in the business, you go over, hi Scott, how are you doing? And it could be just a little line about, he'll say, oh, how are you doing? Oh, yeah, we're brilliant. We had a really busy night last night, or something like that. You're just planting that little seed about how busy you've been. And he might even look into it, or, yeah, we're just recovering from the big event that we put on at the weekend, or something like that. It's like Mike says, a little line about your success, just getting in there. And you might not think it means anything, but it's keeping yourself to the forefront of their mind. Volunteer to do anything extra. So the GM asks you to do something. It's no, I can't do it. I'm too busy. I've got this, I've got that. Yeah, no problem. Two things I've learnt very quickly. The GM doesn't care how tired you are or how busy you are, okay? You always find time for them, and you make sure you get what you can done. But that is doing the extra 1%, and that's getting yourself noticed.
Okay, so when I say about the buzz about you, I think people will form opinions on you as an individual in a company by what people say about you. So I used to think it was a very kind of structured process in how people form opinions, i.e. if I have a great appraisal, that is all that matters. If that one person thinks I'm good, that's all that matters. And actually, what I've learned in how I form my views about people is I tend to talk to people and ask people, oh, how's so-and-so doing? How's so-and-so getting on? And my view is formed by not what you say so much, but what the manager says, what their colleagues say, and what even higher up or what the P&D manager might say. So I'll get a rounded view of people's opinion. And I think making sure the buzz, that what people say about you, is positive. And you can only really do that by not switching off. So just remember, you know, when the senior managers come in to your workplace, you naturally start kind of, right, I'm going to look really sharp. I'm going to got all my patter ready. I'm going to kind of go and chat to them. I'm going to do the 1%. But then when you're off the radar, it's all kind of back to comfy. And I think that we can see through that because we talk, basically. So make sure the buzz about you is consistently good.
Just to touch on that, perfect example is when I get called into the general manager's office to talk about costs or something like that. She's a very open lady, and it ends up talking about the business, the brasserie, the department, and she'll ask, how's so-and-so getting on, how's this person getting on? So from their point of view, they can't just put it on in front of the general manager, because if something happens, she's going to know about it through me, so she'll form that opinion through me.
Okay. Another way to get noticed is make sure if there are any recognition systems within an organisation, put yourself out there. So, for example, we have competitions within our business, and that's a brilliant way to get yourself recognised. You have access to all of the senior management. Even if you don't win, you still get noticed and you get remembered. You stand out from the rest of the crowd. And also with our talent management system, I think if you really want to go somewhere, you need to be in the top kind of 5% of employees in the score that you get for your performance appraisal. But look for an organisation that has got good talent management systems. So when you go for an interview, ask them as one of your questions, how do you spot talent? What would I have to do to make myself stand out and get noticed?
Yeah, I made an effort to get onto the Rising Star scheme. We had like a big open day sort of thing, and I made an effort for that, and it means that I'm seeing Mike a lot more often, so I'm at the forefront of Mike's thoughts. Also Laura Garton, who's the head of the training, her thoughts, she's obviously going to talk to Mike a lot. But there's things like a WSET that says, do you want to go on the advanced this year? And that scares me, because it's going to be very hard work, but of course I'm going to do it, because again, it's another chance to network with somebody else in the company. And just to give you a quick example of the competitions Mike was talking about, we had a supervisor started with us probably about a year ago in Liverpool. She's got on this the serve off, so the waitering skills and things like that. She came second. However, there was such a buzz about her, about the way she conducted herself. Since then, she's been promoted to my assistant. She won money through like the department training that she did, and then the big Caucus Awards, which we do. We have a DVD where we see actually the picking process, and there was a big argument between two people because someone was so adamant that there was such a great buzz about Christine that she should win, and eventually she did win, so she's getting all this recognition just through putting herself through that.
Yeah, the argument was between me and Robert, the CEO, so and I won, I was surprised. So very eloquent when I'm arguing. So one of the next key points, really, about getting noticed is one of the common things that I hear from graduates when they're on our Fast Track programme. They'll say to me, right, I'm ready for the next challenge. You know, I'm a bit bored. and I need a bit more to do. So what do you think my next question is? What do you think I do when people say that to me? Any guesses? So when people say I'm a bit bored, what do you think my question is? I'm bored being a waiter. Who do you think? What do you think I might ask their manager? Right, OK, well, what are you going to do about being bored? Yeah, exactly. And I'll also go and speak to their manager and say, what are they like at their job? They're saying they're a little bit bored, OK? So what are they like at the job? Are they the best waiter that you've ever, ever, ever come across? Are they the best in their team? Are they the best at everything that they do? And invariably, the answer is no. So what I then do is I go back and I say, well, you say you're bored, but look, there's still a little bit more you can do. I think maybe the fact that you're saying you're bored, you might not be focusing so much on the actual key areas of your role. So let's refocus there. And I always think, get the basics right. Be punctual. Do the extra 10 minutes before and after that Will was telling you about. Make sure that you are brilliant. If you're in food and beverage, that you can sell everything, that you get the really good average spends, that you... or the one that is kind of can do the order of service, the same on reception, the same on the other departments. Make sure that you are absolutely brilliant about what you're doing when you're doing it, because actually you won't, you know, people will talk, and if you're asking for more, you have to be at a point where you are ready to take it on.
Key word in that is consistency. You can be absolutely fantastic with the guest, get all the numbers right and that, but you come to service one night and a plate's not polished and the GM picks up on it, and all your hard work that you've done for months and months and months is just thrown away because you can't polish a plate. And it might be one or it might be two, but that one little thing will stick in their mind a lot more than any of the good stuff that you've done.
Yeah, very good. And actually getting the basics right is the easy bit. You're all, you know, if you're here, you're all more than capable of doing it. So... what you'll find in an organisation is there'll be lots of clues about what an organisation values and the sorts of places that you can find this information. Obviously, the performance appraisal areas. So if an organisation is going to assess you against certain areas, those areas will be what the organisation think is good. So make sure you know right from the start what criteria will I be appraised on, because I want to get the top marks. Ask people. So if you see people progressing within the organisation, model their behaviour and actually engage with them, talk to them, because then if they're progressing, people will ask them about their opinion on other people. So find out from other people what they do well. And usually a good place to look is in the handbook. There's usually a strap line about what the organisation values. So make sure you're clear about what people are going to measure you against. And this is what we measure people against within our organisation. And I think it's quite a good benchmark generally to do a self-check. So are you passionate, and would people describe you as being passionate about what you do? Because that's contagious. And in any service organisation, passion is what's valued massively. And it's the thing that does make you stand out. Can you cope under pressure? We've thrown some right whammies at Will in his time with us, and every single time he's been like the swan with the calm kind of facade, and underneath his Will's falling apart. do you kind of get the job right and have good attention to detail? Can you build great relationships? And are you absolutely energetic and driven to succeed?
Yeah, just to touch on that. Like I said, I have won a couple of awards, the Young Guns, and I did win Virgin Rising Star back in October. And the main thing that I think I get across when I talk about the industry is the passion that comes out of my voice and the way I talk about it. And it's like Mike says, it's contagious. They can see that I want to go somewhere, I get excited about the industry, and that excites somebody else, and it can really get enthusiasm running. Resilience, like we say, we've had some massive events at Liverpool, and it daunts you when you look at them, but afterwards you're just like, well, we did a fantastic job there. And again, it's another way of getting noticed. The attention to detail, it is like we said, you know, is every glass polished? How are the waiters looking? How smart are you? Do you know what I mean? We had, at the start of the Rising Star Day, I made a point of making sure I was looking really, really smart, new suit on, and that helped, stood me in really good stead, because it made me stand out above everybody else. And relationships, everyone you meet, you know, like we said, they've all got an opinion, they'll form an opinion and people talk. And just always have that energy, you know what I mean, always pushing on.
Very good. So the way that we identified Will was through measuring him against those five areas, and we measured him on his potential, so how far we thought he could go in the company and what his performance was like. So because he was doing a great job at the time, he aced this score. And because when we asked him in his appraisal, are you mobile, do you want to progress, do you want to be a GM of the future, because he said, and because the manager thought he had potential, he aced that score. So Will ended up in this box. And this box, the online computer system that we use, gives me a list of everybody in this box, and they're the people we identify as our rising stars. People who have low potential and low performance, this is definitely a box you do not want to be in, because we fire these people usually. So they're the people who don't really want to be there. So make sure that when you're getting in a performance appraisal, make sure that you are focused on getting into this top box here. And actually, just so you can see the demographics, we were happy to only find 2% in that little old box there, but only 7%, which we whittled down to just 5% of our people, were future leaders. And they're the people that we invest our money in training and development, i.e. Will. So you might think it's a simple system, that I'm just having my performance appraisal, but what happens next is we get this list of names, we send those names to all the general managers in the company, and they say, yes, I think that person should be on the list. That list then goes to their regional directors, who endorse the list of names to say, yes, they're all the right people. Once in a while, some people come off. But then what happens is, as a board level, we review that list. So we discuss with the CEO, with the CFO and all the senior directors, we discuss the list of names. So at this point, because Will has done a good job in the brasserie on his appraisal and he's getting good scores, his name is getting bandied around with the CEO. So now Will's name is up there as real potential for the future of our business. So what we do then is, all we've got is a list of names, so we have to bring it to life a little bit. And this is where we invited people like Will to attend our Rising Star Development Day. We called it training, but really it was assessment. So really we were checking people out to see whether they really stood out and they should be a rising star. And this is where Will did some little 1% things, because some people, believe it or not, turned up in jeans and a T-shirt. Other people bought a new suit, had new shoes and really looked the part. And that was a good move for Will. I remember my first impression being, actually, he's standing out as being someone who looks like they should be there. During the day, we covered a number of areas of assessment, and Will will tell you about a couple of highlights from when we put him through his paces.
So first off, all we were told was we had to do a one-minute presentation about if we were CEO for the day. And when I do presentations, I usually like to go first because, A, you get it out of the way, and B, if you've got anything to say, you can say it first. Somebody hasn't nicked your idea, and you're not thinking all the way through, oh, God, I've done this wrong because they've done that. So I think it breeds a lot more confidence. Anyway, Mike wrote the list of when people to go, and I was last. And I was like, that's the worst possible thing for me. So I was thinking all the way through, what can I do to change it about a bit? Because everyone's got similar ideas, because what can you talk about for a minute? Anyway, there was about a panel of five sat at the front with Mike, a commercial director, and then four round tables. And everyone sort of stood at the back to face the judges. Well, the panel, sorry. And I thought, well, I'm going to try and be a bit different. So I said to Mike, am I all right to do it from the opposite side of the room? So I walked to the front, and Scott, the commercial director, straight away said, Will, I think you're meant to be at the back of the room. And I was like, no, sorry, Scott, I've cleared it with Mike. He says I can do it here. I feel like more people can see me, more people will be able to hear me, and I think that's better for my presentation. And then I sort of like was thinking all the way through, oh, they look like the judges from X Factor, so I thought I'd get that little bit of a joke in there. So straight away, I'd seen all these presentations, but managed to get mine across a little bit different just from where I was standing. And then it went into things like, we had attention to detail where we were given this box of loads of tiny little bits of, like, they were like little connects is the best way to describe it, and we had to put them all back together. Well, back in the box, exactly as I found. This was hard because there's about 30 people all trying to struggle to try and show off. So you try and need to find little bits of jobs, and then we go on to the building blocks, which everyone seems to hate because you've got to build a tunnel and a cart. And again, it's looking for people that sort of stand out but not too bossy or too pushy. And I think you're given about a time limit of about 45 minutes, and that is a good chance of really showing you true colours, because some people were like, oh, we can't do this. You know what I mean? It's a waste of time. I'm just going to sit back and I'm not going to get involved. And then I think what Mike was looking for, the people that were encouraging people to get involved, motivating. What do you think? And then I was lucky enough as well. I was picked out of that group to analyse the group. So it was another chance for me to shine. All the way through, they're analysing everything you do as well. So
very good. And so from that process, we identified our shooting stars. And as I say, they're people who we think can go all the way to GM and higher within our organisations. And Will's on that list. Very well done. We have shining stars who we think are people who are ready for promotion, but maybe we're not sure whether they can go all the way. And then we have rising stars, and they're people who have basically just been identified through the performance appraisal and will stay there, basically. They're the people who we thought maybe not. So then what happened was we put them on a number of modules for training and development, which Will has told you about. He's learned about leadership, planning and delegation, giving feedback and communicating. And this has kind of helped him profile himself again all the way through, as well as develop. And that's pretty much how we spotted talent within our organisation. The last bit we just wanted to cover is that learning doesn't really stop at education. It just becomes less formal. I think never forgetting to learn is the key thing. The day you start thinking that you know it, or when an organisation thinks, well, we're brilliant now, that's it, that's when things start to go wrong. So it's always having that little nag of, and I know Scott Harper, the commercial director, not Will's dad, but the commercial director in our business, he would say this as well, and that's something him and I have in common. We're always a little bit worried. So that energises us to always never take things for granted and always want to do a really good job at whatever we do. Networking, again, is a great way of learning things. I opened a new hotel in New York when I was at Firmdale. I didn't have to spend any money on consultants because I connected with people and I networked with people to find out information about law, about systems, about things that I need to think about for New York. So, and one of the final things that I'll say to you is to always try and put yourself in your stretch zone. So don't do things that feel comfy. Don't always do things that you know you're good at. Do things to put yourself out there, because that's the bit. It's keeping yourself challenged and stretched is the bit that is a lifelong skill, and it's what you'll need the higher up you go through the hierarchy. And Will?
Yeah, I just want to touch on the networking part once more and just tell you a little bit of a story about actually from this university. Now, I try and stay in touch, and obviously that's why I'm back here today. But I remember coming back in March last year, and because Jenny stayed in good contact with me, we had a little bit of a chat. And I was looking for a sommelier at the time, having no luck trying to find somebody in Liverpool and been looking for about 6 months. Had a little bit of a chat with Jenny, and we managed to put me in contact with somebody in the final year who was very, very keen, passionate, and we eventually gave her the job. She's then turned into what I would say is possibly a potential rising star, because she's working so hard and willing to learn, and that just shows the importance of networking. It doesn't have to be just somebody in the industry. I'm meeting people today that's hopefully going to help me in my future. And then just putting yourself in your stretch zone regularly. Sometimes you think you get nervous. And I've put myself in the stretch zone again this morning, because I've done a presentation for ages, and before I was nervous, I'll admit. I'm okay now, but seeing so many people here again, I was like, ooh. But it gets the adrenaline rushing, and at the end of a busy night, if you've pushed, say, in the brasserie, if we push for that extra 10, 20 people that we think we might normally do, and we've stretched us, the feeling afterwards is so fantastic, and then it gives you that extra confidence to continually improve. If you don't put you in that stretch zone, you're not going to get the confidence, and you'll just stay very, very static.
So, to conclude, our pearls of wisdom are: do the 1% in all that you do, and remember, people talk. So it's and that's how organisations will form their opinion on you and your potential to progress. Okay, so there's never an off switch, basically. Don't think of opportunities to shine as extra work, but instead it's a way to get ahead. So have a long-term focus. Remember, it's about getting noticed above and beyond the rest of the people. Put yourself in the stretch zone regularly and take calculated risks, particularly early on in your career, to fast track up the hierarchy. And when you're networking, you never know when that person is going to be someone who's going to help you. So don't underestimate the power and value of networking, and make the most out of every learning opportunity throughout your career, formally and informally. Okay, thank you very much. Any questions?
Thank you so much. That is real food for thought. Real food for thought. But we do actually say, we have a little slogan here, courtesy of one of my colleagues, Robert Haywood. Hospitality made in Sheffield. And we like to think that you are all very capable of emulating Will and becoming that shooting star. Any questions, guys? Got time for one or two before we progress to 10:28? No?
Can I just emphasise something on the networking? And it's something I wrote in the CAFRA last week, particularly with the students, that to collect people's business cards right on the back of them where you met them, when you see them, when you get back into the office or into college, email them, nice to see you, I'm so-and-so, and then keep it there and keep it for future reference. They've really come in one.
Right. Wonderful tip, that big. Yes, darling?
So, I'm just curious, is $9 great for every employee or just for management?
Say that again, sorry?
I wonder, the $9 great is for every employee or just for management?
Yeah, we have those areas for every employee, but we describe what good looks like differently for the level of the hierarchy. So the managers will have relationships for managers will be about leadership, rather than relationships for a frontline employee will be about team working.
So can everybody know their progress, I mean?
Yeah. And it just keeps it simple. Keeping things simple is good.
Excellent. Okay, thank you so much.
Brilliant. Thanks, everyone.